Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
Aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. And we are sitting here. It's Saturday morning and start 2 hours of your phone calls and news and all kinds of other good things like that. The webcam is running. The sun is just coming up over the eastern horizon here on the island of Oahu. And we have lots to talk about today. And if you'd like to join us on the air, of course, the number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Today starts the last Christmas shopping weekend before Christmas. Christmas, of course, is next Thursday. And tomorrow, if I recall correctly, is the start of Hanukkah for all of our Jewish listeners out there. And I used to know all that stuff because my first wife was Jewish and we had the menorah and everything, but I've kind of lost track of those dates since then. Anyway, it is the last shopping weekend. You've probably seen it on all the news, even the last break here. It's the last weekend. You know, retailers are out there. They're nervous. They want your money. The credit cards want you to spend money and borrow money that you don't have so that you can be making interest payments out of the next year so that they can have performing reserves of capital. And remember, if you don't go out there and max out your credit cards on a new flat panel TV set, the terrorists will have won. And so, obviously, this weekend, they're looking basically at the worst Christmas in at least the last decade in terms of the retail establishment. And my guess is there are some good deals to be had out there. The few times I've braved the malls recently with my wife in tow, we've seen a lot of lookers, but very, very few people actually buying. We've seen some incredible. I keep joking about flat panel TV sets, but I've actually seen some really good deals on those things. It's amazing. I think the last glass tube TV that I bought, I paid like $700 for, and that was actually more than 10 years ago. And now I'm seeing these huge flat panel TVs for half that much. And the only reason I haven't bought one is, actually two reasons. One, I'm broke. And two, I don't actually watch a lot of television. And I know that may sound strange for somebody who works in the industry. But for those of you who've ever worked in film and television, you know the hours are very, very long. And for most of the people, the pay isn't all that great. And as a matter of fact, as soon as I'm done with this radio show today, I'm directing a TV commercial. So I don't actually watch a lot of television. So why buy a big, huge flat panel TV set that I'm going to have to dust and otherwise is basically going to remain off? So anyway, this is it. The lights are up. I've got a little tiny Christmas tree I got to set up after the show here just so the neighbors won't burn me as a heretic or anything like this. Okay, looking back at the news this last week, obviously the big story, there's a lot of big stories, but one of the big ones continues to be Bernie Madoff, as in Madoff with the cash. And it is becoming apparent that the regulators whose salaries and offices and equipment are paid for by our tax dollars, they didn't drop the ball in the Bernard Madoff scandal. They didn't even pick it up in the first place. Everybody was turning a blind eye to what this guy was doing. The Securities Exchange Commission knew in 2006 that Madoff was lying to them about how he was managing his customers' money. Another investor, Henry Markopoulos, for the last 10 years has been going to the SEC with mathematical models to prove that Madoff's returns were just too good to be true. And Markopoulos and his friends tried to replicate the returns using the standard mathematical models and the data on the investments they presumed Madoff to be using, and they couldn't. They couldn't get the same results. And the SEC didn't want to look at it. Now, Barron's is reporting that Madoff never explained how he made his money. He said it's all very secret and very proprietary. And oddly enough, investors who were with Madoff's group were asked to not reveal that they were doing business with him. Now, this should have been the red warning flag, because if you're running a brokerage and you're making these double-digit returns every single year, you want everybody to know that rich people have got their money with you, because that attracts more business. But Madoff's telling everybody, just don't tell anybody's there. And it's like, come on. This was like the biggest sign something was not working. And it wouldn't have taken a lot of digging to find out that something was wrong. A little bit of digging would have instantly pulled the facade down. Now, I think what is going on here, and I'm going to support this up with a little bit more information. What is going on here is Madoff was not doing this stuff in a vacuum. Okay? He had other people who were working with him. He had that little supposedly independent auditing firm that's one office and three people who were supposed to be checking his books and doing the paperwork to say, yes, we're on the up and up here. And it reminds me of that big accounting firm that got caught in the Enron scandal, that got pulled down and driven out of business. So, you know, plus you've got all of those people who were in Madoff's investment group right at the beginning of the Ponzi scheme. They're the ones who made money. They're the ones that $50 billion wound up being divided among. Now, the government's not going after them. The government has decided, oh, no, it would cause way too much upset to go and get back that $50 billion from them. So we're just going to get it from the taxpayers to make up the losses. But those people who got swindled, they're angry. I don't blame them. And they're going to start filing lawsuits. So right now, everybody who was with the Ponzi scheme early on, they don't want it to come out that they were beneficiaries of the scheme, because then they become targets for civil lawsuits, including punitive damages. You know, for having been part of this scam, and in most cases possibly knowing it was a scam right from the get-go. So right now, Bernie Madoff is a live liability for a lot of people. There is almost a red carpet leading out of his home begging him to escape the country. This is why a guy who has stolen $50 billion is under house arrest. He's confined to his home only at night. He can leave during the daytime and he wants. But yes, he's confined to his home at night and he has guards. And get this, the guards work directly for Bernie Madoff. They're not working for the government. They're not working for the SEC. They're not working for the people whose money he took. Bernie Madoff has hired these guards. They're there to protect him from all the death threats, but they're also supposedly to make sure he doesn't leave home at night. Well, since Bernie's signing the paychecks, I wouldn't put too much trust in that. And I can just see it now, the guard saying, well, you know, we work for Bernie, and he told us to guard that back door. And when we came in, the front door was open, and Bernie, well, he was gone. And, you know, they're just practically, there's a lot of people who want him to leave and go away and escape to Israel where there's no extradition. And if he doesn't escape to Israel, he may join Ken Lay, wherever Ken Lay happens to be right now. Or that other investor, gentleman, I'm blanking on his name, who tried to fake his own suicide at the bridge, and then he turned up a few days later. So, you know, it's just amazing. Now, interestingly enough, we are already seeing the spin. I think when this thing first blew up, and they were, Bernie Madoff, and they were trying to find some way they could make him sympathetic, like he wasn't such a bad guy. And look at that wonderful smile. And look at all the charitable works that he did with that money he stole, you know, which is what Al Capone used to do up in Chicago. He'd steal all this money and break people's legs, and then he'd turn around and he'd give money to orphanages, and everybody would say, well, see, he's not all that bad. So Bernie Madoff is doing this, and I predicted that sooner or later they're going to drag the Holocaust into this, and sure enough, we're already hearing this whole financial upset to the Jewish financial interests of this country as Kristallnacht II. And the ADL is already screaming that the only reason anybody's paying attention to Bernie Madoff is it's anti-Semitism. We're only picking on him because he's Jewish. No, we're picking on him because he took $50 billion away from his investors, some of whom happened to be Jewish. A lot of them weren't, because of all the different ins and outs and whatnot. And, we keep hearing about all the Jewish investments and charities that have been wrecked. We're not hearing about the others. I guess they don't really count. But what the ADL is doing, we're going to come back from this break here, and we're going to talk about this latest public relations campaign to create a sympathetic climate. It is shameless. 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about Bernard Madoff and what appears to be the start of a propaganda campaign to once again resurrect anti-Semitism in order to create sympathy for poor Bernie Madoff and all the troubles that he is facing in the public eye. And the ADL has come out with this commentary that basically the Madoff scandal has triggered a huge surge in anti-Semitism around the world and on the Internet and blah, 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 blah. And I will concede that over the last several days, I received a bunch of emails filled with the most vile, racist, stereotypical, cliched commentary about the Jewish people. And you know something? It's always from email addresses I have never seen before in my life. And the real giveaway is that the particular pejorative slang being used is so outdated that it's obvious that what we're dealing with here is not genuine public reaction to the scandal, but a staged public relations campaign to try and get this stuff out on the Internet. You know, I mean, they're using language to describe Jews that I don't think has actually been used in real life since before World War II. I mean, that's how outdated it is. Okay? And I think what it is they're trying to accomplish one of two things. They're either trying to create this idea of anti-Semitism to such an extent that they can go before a judge and say that Bernard Madoff and his eventual co-defendants can't get a fair trial in the United States, therefore it should be moved someplace else, such as perhaps Israel. Okay? Or, they're going to create such a climate of fear of being called an anti-Semite that no juror will convict him for fear of being tarnished as an anti-Semite. But one thing is certain, given the over-the-topness of these emails and the outdated language, I don't believe they're genuine. I don't believe there are really people out there who think and speak like this. It feels written. It feels staged. It feels like a bad movie. It feels like a cheap movie, B-movie, B-picture script is what I'm reading. And, you know, again, it's all spin and spin doctoring. And the bottom line is we are not on Bernie Madoff's case because he's Jewish. We're on Bernie Madoff's case because he took $50 billion away from his investors, Jew and Gentile alike, and the SEC let him get away with it for 10 years, despite clear and ample warning. That's why we're on his case. And we would be on his case regardless of what his religion or genetic background was, just as we were on the case of the people at Enron and other swindles. The issue here is honesty, and in a time when our economy cannot afford $50 billion losses in a single pop. So that's why we're on Madoff's case. Anyway, moving right along, Henry Kissinger, who I believe is still under warrant for war crimes in a couple of South American countries he dares not set foot in, has come out basically saying that the only solution to our international financial crisis is a new international system of financial economic control. In other words, our building is on fire, so let's jam open the fire doors so that we can run around a lot faster. And this is going to be a tough sell, and I know a lot of people, such as Alex Jones, are of the opinion that the economic crisis was brought about deliberately to create a public hue and cry for a new global ruling authority, the New World Order, or the United Nations, or however they're going to decorate it. And whether or not it's intentional or not is really kind of irrelevant, because the bottom line here is that the vast majority of the world's population understand that globalism is what turned an economic crisis in one country into a global catastrophe. And throwing more globalism at the problem is not going to be seen as a solution. There's no way to sell that. Insanity is described as doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different outcome. It doesn't work that way. Globalism created this disaster. Globalism can't get us out. be like pouring kerosene on the fire or gasoline on the fire. Anyway, in line of this, as you know, we've been reporting over the last couple of weeks about the riots in Greece, which are continuing as I speak to you today. And they had spread to other countries such as France and Denmark and Spain and Italy, now in Sweden. And The Independent is reporting right now that for all intents and purposes, the riots in Greece have spread all across Europe. There's no point in keeping track of which countries it's in and which it is not. In various degrees of activity, it is happening everywhere. And this is not a response to this Greek young person being shot by the police. That was the sparking incident. What is fueling these riots across Europe is opposition to globalism. Because they're seeing how the financial system is set up to reap huge profits for the elite at the expense of the ordinary people, and they are unhappy about it. And I don't blame them. And it's going to come to this country sooner or later. Our government is preparing to deal with it. If you're going to be part of it, you need to start thinking about how you're going to deal with the government's dealing with it. Now, the young people in Greece are showing some surprising ingenuity. They're using little pocket laser pointers to dazzle the eyes of the police and to basically pick targets for the rocks and bottles, because the whole theory of suppressing civil unrest is they have a broad phalanx. They're using Roman techniques. These riot police are using Roman techniques. They get these big shields, they lock them together, they stand in a line, and they move forward against, and they figure you're going to be spread out across that front, and they can deal with it. But what the Greek kids have figured out is using a pocket laser, they pick one cop, and everybody focuses on him. And they smash right through the line, they get to the rear, and they completely scatter it. It's a very brilliant little tactic. It works very well. The riot police are thinking in 2,000-year-old tactics. They're not thinking in terms of what is available to 21st-century kids. And ultimately, the fact that it's gone on this long and the Greeks have run out of tear gas shows this is really serious stuff. This could be Romania all over again. And I wish them a lot of luck because, you know, especially what we've learned very painfully here in the United States, all governments are oligarchies. All governments exploit their people to the fullest extent possible for their own personal enrichment and empowerment. Which brings me to a little tiny story regarding Dick Cheney, Deadeye Dick, king of the shotguns, who shot his friend in the face. Oh, we're out of time. We're going to come back with Dick Cheney after the break. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Got lots more to talk about. Great Saturday. If you're watching over the webcam, the sun is finally up in the back there, and it looks like it may actually be a lovely shooting day. And I say shooting in the sense of shooting a TV commercial, which is where I'm going after this. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And this segment, I want to talk about Deadeye Dick Cheney, the man who shot his friend in the face with a shotgun. And unlike the rest of us, not only did not go to jail, but got his friend to apologize publicly on television for the inconvenience of standing in the path of the buckshot as it went whizzing through his flesh. Well, earlier this week, Dick Cheney admitted on national television without a trace of shame or regret that he had, in fact, authorized the use of what are politely called aggressive interrogation techniques, torture, on prisoners of war taken by the United States in Iraq and shipped to Guantanamo or Abu Ghraib or these various other rendition sites around the world. And obviously one of these aggressive techniques that Dick Cheney has now admitted he personally authorized was waterboarding. Now, waterboarding is a form of torture, without a doubt. It was used by the Spanish Inquisition. It was used by the Nazis. It was used by the Japanese. And now it's being used by the United States. Now, with the issue of the Japanese, at the end of World War II, during the war crimes trials, Japanese military officers who had waterboarded captured Americans were hung for that crime. Torture is illegal in the United States. The lawyer who claimed it wasn't has already been disbarred. Dick Cheney has admitted authorizing the use of a technique that we hung Japanese military officers for doing at the end of World War II. So we have ourselves a real moral dilemma, because we have a new president coming in who promised change we could believe in. And one of the changes that we are all desperate for is the rule of law in the land, not of powerful men, of powerful women, of powerful individuals, or powerful corporations. The rule of law, and in particular, the idea that torture is not part of the national character of the United States. I don't approve of torture. They do not have my consent to torture. And I don't want to pay for it either. So we have this dilemma, because the conventional wisdom is that Barack Obama is not going to seek or will not even allow any investigation or prosecution of the Bush administration for the crimes committed over the past 8 years. Now, as far as I'm concerned, this just signals that Barack Obama is more of the same. Cover-ups, the crimes of the elite go unpunished, uninvestigated, and I'm sorry, but he is already, he's not even in office, and he's lost my trust, he's lost my confidence. And Mr. Obama, I am sorry that it's not like we really had much choice. It was down to you or McCain. Either one of them was going to be a loser. And I know that you're the lesser of two evils, but Mr. Obama, you are still evil. If you are not willing to take a stand on the issue of torture carried out by the previous administration, then I don't trust anything that you're going to say. And I know the conventional wisdom is that you can't fight a recession and the torture crimes at the same time. I think the two are inextricably linked. Because if you want the trust and faith and enthusiasm of the American people to make the sacrifices that must be made to get the economy back on track, then you'd better show that you mean business in getting this nation back on that moral track that we used to occupy. If you don't prosecute Bush and Cheney for the war crimes they have committed, you will never get this nation back on track, either morally, spiritually, or economically. It won't happen. One precedes the other. You jail Bush and Cheney for the torture crimes, then we'll follow you into fixing the recession and the economy. You're not going to get one without the other. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Andy in Illinois. Aloha, Andy. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Mike. About these riots in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with a document that was published by the Ministry of Defense in England, 2007? They gave their 30-year outlook.
I think I recall vaguely something about it. There's been a lot of these documents published by a lot of governments, including the United States, which have this very long, drawn-out, you know, scenario of the potential for massive civil unrest. And generally, they always try and lay the blame on the Internet, because those pesky taxpayers, they just know too much about what's going on now.
Well, you know, I just wonder, over in Greece, they used the kid as a front, basically put it out in the media. I'm just wondering, can you give me a timeline, best guess estimate of as how soon those riots will come here?
Well, this is just a guess. I don't have my crystal ball here. It's still in the shop. But I think in January or February of next year, we're going to see the economy really take a major tank, because it's kind of sort of propping up now in the hope that they'd get something out of the retail Christmas holiday sales. But I think once those retail numbers come in, we're going to see the economy contract even more, and worse, We still have not seen the end of the fallout from the Bernard Madoff scandal. We're hearing, again, more of these charitable foundations are falling apart. They're shutting their doors. Unfortunately, a lot of other financial firms were using their holdings, their investments in Bernard Madoff's Ponzi scheme as their collateral for other loans. And so now their creditors are coming back and saying, well, you've got to recollateralize or we're going to have to call the note. And so there's this whole domino effect that's starting to ripple through the economy. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's a great deal of reluctance to actually investigate or prosecute this publicly, because it's just spreading everywhere. So I'm figuring probably about March, April, especially as we get close to tax time and people get really angry about that, I think that's probably when we're going to start to see some real open rebellion on the streets of the United States.
Well, you know, this Madoff scandal, it might buy us some time. And theoretically speaking, we don't really have the numbers right now. People are waking up, but we don't have enough boots on the ground. But as this thing unwinds and that domino effect keeps spreading like a rock hitting a pond, it might just, I'm hoping it might just slow their plans down a little bit so we can buy some time.
Well, you know, it's a complex issue, but look at it this way. Right now, one out of every 10 households in the United States is either behind in their mortgage or foreclosed. So that's
right.
10% of the population right now. That's 30 million people who are already angry. And then you've got one out of every five households is in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service. Okay? So that's 60 million households. And yes, there's a lot of overlap, or the 60 million people. I mean, 60 million people is more than enough, you know, to be having a prolonged set of riots and whatnot. And you've got all these people out of work. You've got people literally on their knees begging for jobs at trash dump. You think they like being on their knees? There's a lot of anger inside there. We see it with all the road rage going on here. You know, I don't like, let me back up here and clarify something. I don't like violence. And the reason I've run whatreallyhappened.com for 15 years and run this radio show is I've been trying to find some way to get out of this mess that is nonviolent. I have given up hope that we're going to find that path, and I see it as inevitable. I don't like it. I don't encourage it. I'm not desirous of it. I just don't see it as avoidable anymore. And I think when it happens, as I keep saying before, we don't need to march into Washington, D.C. All we have to do is just send a message to the rest of the world. We're not going to pay the bills anymore around here for a government
that's
non-corrupt.
That's one of the problems, Mike. According to that document from England, Washington, D.C. is the last place anybody wants to march because these boys are prepared to drop a neutron bomb just to eliminate that, what do you want to call it, excess population problem?
The useless eaters. Well, I know there's talk about biological weapons and stuff. Anyway, listen, Andy, we got to let you go because we got to do some commercials here. But thank you very much for the phone call. We'll be back after these sponsors. If you'd like to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be back talking about the potential for the riots in Europe to spread to North America.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappens.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of hour one of our Saturday show here. And we got a few little stories to cover here. And I'm still thinking about that last phone call, and we kind of got into a topic. I think this idea that the European riots could come to the United States is kind of the 950-pound gorilla in the room that everybody is not looking at, but obviously it's something that we should be thinking about because it has. It's spread from Greece to all these other countries. Now they're basically calling them the European riots, and we're not getting a lot of coverage of them here in the United States. It's all Kaylee all the time, and when Kaylee runs out of information, they go to Blagojevich, and no doubt they'll drag Sarah Palin. Well, they already have. Sarah Palin's daughter's new husband's mother just got arrested for drugs. Talk about desperation on the cusp of madness trying to find something newsworthy. plus the inevitable commercials for the current crop of movies and Christmas shopping and whatnot. But it is something that we need to talk about, and I think in hour two we'll probably get onto that topic a little bit more. So think about it and call and let me know what you think about the possibility that we may see some major civil upheavals here in the United States, because I'm hardly the first person to bring up the subject. We've been reading about it. Even Citigroup had a memo that was leaked out that said they're predicting major social upheaval very soon here in the United States. And I have been saying all along that my ultimate forecast for the government of the United States was that it was going to go the way of the USSR, that it was simply going to reach a point of corruption and economic malfeasance and loss of faith of the people, where it was just going to simply collapse in on itself from all of its internal rot and go away the way the USSR did, and then we'd get a new government in with some brains, we'd kick out the oligarchs, and so we'd kick out the Bernie Madoffs. And then we'd get some leadership that's got a little bit more sense. I mean, look at how Putin just turned around the Russian republics. And now they've got a great economy, and they're manufacturing, and they're selling stuff, and they're doing really, really well over there. All right, a couple of short stories here. The Recording Institute, I'm a member of the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, has canceled any further plans for lawsuits against individual computer users for downloading and sharing copyrighted music. This decision is based on two factors. One, the return on the lawsuits has been minimal. They wind up suing people who don't have a lot of money to begin with. I mean, doesn't that make sense? If you've got money, you just go out to iTunes, you buy the songs. It's inexpensive stuff. You know, and mind you, I'm being in the industry and owning a company that at least in part produces some music, such as the wonderful Bump Music by my wife, Claire. My sympathies are with the copyright holders. We're in this business to make a living. And, you know, we want you to buy our music, not steal it, obviously. But on the other hand, you know, the people who are stealing the music, by and large, are people who couldn't afford it. So the lawsuits were coming up kind of empty. It was a terror tactic. More importantly, though, it was just bad public relations, because it really turned what should have been a moral issue into a big adversarial game of can I get away with it, you know, bad guy, good guy. Ultimately, the stealing of music or movies is a moral issue. We should know right from wrong. We understand that there are certain rules for behavior, whether you are religious or not, that there are certain universal rules which we understand are conducive to a harmonious society in which we can all live and get along together in peace. Okay? It's don't steal. Buy what you need. If you can't afford it, go without. Very simple. The problem is we will never be able to convince our young people that copying a music or movie file is a big, hairy crime, while we have a president that lies about other countries in order to launch wars of conquest to steal their oil and land and wealth and wipe their culture from the face of the earth. Young people are smart enough to realize there's a tremendous amount of hypocrisy in there. They don't understand why making a copy of a file, I mean, they're leaving the original right where it was. It's not like they're removing anything. They don't understand why making a copy of a file should be a big deal at a time when we're giving the president and vice president a total pass on torturing people to find weapons of mass destruction which didn't really exist in the first place. So you can't have it both ways. You can't have a leader of a country that engages in such crimes and then expect the ordinary people of that country to feel an obligation to be moral. All hierarchical structures, whether it's a nation or a company, they're going to inherit the morality of the people at the top. It's Rivero's rule of hierarchies. So the RIAA has canceled the lawsuits. They're going to be working with ISPs to discourage piracy, which means more locks and security and more Vista. And as you know, Usenet, which was a tremendously useful resource from before the days of web browsers, has been shut down on most ISPs because the official claim was it was to stop the flood of child pornography. But in reality, it was from the RIAA and the MPAA because that was an uncontrollable venue for the sharing of pirated files. And it's a case of throwing out something useful to all because of the sins of a tiny few. And again, as I was saying yesterday, the FBI has lost all credibility in the war on terror if they can't catch the hackers. They can't catch the hackers and throw them in jail. Then, you know, the terrorists of the world, they get a free pass. There's no way the FBI can catch those guys. They can't catch the hackers. Jeez. Anyway, another little piece of news. Earlier this week, we heard talk by the Federal Reserve about credit card reform, caps on the interest that could be charged, limits on fees, limits on allowing credit card companies to go for the subprime borrowers, which, of course, created the crisis in real estate. We are now finding out that those reforms have been put off until 2010. So for the entire year of 2009, the credit card companies can basically run rampant. And the first thing that people are noticing, and we're noticing it here, the fees and the interest rates are being jacked up on those of us who are making our credit card payments on time. Okay? And everybody's saying, well, we the taxpayers, against our will, but we're now owners, at least in part, of J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Citigroup. And these are the people who make. They're the top of the pyramid in the credit card loan industry. So if we own them and we're making our time, our payments on time, why are we being gouged with higher rates and fees? Well, because it's open season on any Americans who still have any money left at all. They're not going to go after the people who are already broke. They're going after the people who still got money, and that means you. And even though you're playing by the rules, they're just going to change the rules because it's a mass looting. And the government's doing the nudge, nudge, wink, wink, and yes, we're going to talk about putting caps and reforms on you, but not for another year. So for the next 12 months, you can just loot the populace at will. Hopefully by then the economy will at least be showing signs of recovering or the country will have collapsed as a whole. And we won't have to worry about reforms and caps and the rest of it. But a lot of people, you talk about anger that leads to the European riots coming here to the United States. That's a big part of it. Even the people who are working their guts out to stay up on all their payments, they're getting gouged. They're getting abused. And you keep running up these fees and interest rates higher and higher, and you're going to increase the level of defaults. And that's just going to accelerate the process. And I keep coming back to this, and I'm going to keep saying it over and over again. The government could fix the economy overnight by slashing taxes 50% across the board. The economy would light up like a Christmas tree or a Hanukkah bush, depending upon where you're coming from. Overnight, the economy would revive with a 50% tax cut. But the government won't do that. They're adding taxes. They're adding more taxes. We have the governor of New York has come out now saying he wants an obesity tax. It's for our health, of course, because obesity is contributing to health problems, and we've got to charge more money for the people and products that are contributing to the obesity factor. Well, if obesity were the real issue, they would ban aspartame, MSG, and synthetic bovine growth hormone. But they're not. It's just another excuse to take more money from you. And that's why our economy is dying. We're going to take a break here for some commercials and news. We'll be back with hour two of our show in a little bit. And we're going to get into this issue about the riots in Europe. Could they come here? What might be the future for the United States in 2009? We'll be back after the news break.
Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to hour two of our Saturday show. If you're watching through the studio webcam, the sun is well and truly up here on the island of Oahu. And our weather, at least, is doing very well. Of course, it's a very, very different story on the mainland. The Midwest has been hit by a major severe storm. It's now moving west. They're expecting it to hit Seattle. They're preparing for massive power blackouts there. There's another storm just moved into New England. It's just really frozen things there. They're still without power in some parts of the state. We've had snow in Las Vegas, not up in the mountains. We're talking right down on the strip itself. This last week, there was snow yesterday in Malibu, California. So it is definitely going to be a very, very chilly winter this year. Now, obviously, the other big chill continues to be in the economy. And speaking of Malibu and California, the unemployment rate in California has hit officially 8.4%. And, of course, let's go back to Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and his comment about the dire economic forecasts.
Now, there's another way you can tell your Republicans your faith in free enterprise, faith in the resourcefulness of the American people, and faith in the U.S. economy. And to those critics who are so pessimistic about our economy, I say, don't be economic girly man.
Okay, well, Arnie, I'm afraid the economic girly men were right, and the muscleheads were wrong, and that is just the way history is going to remember this whole situation. Now, as a reminder, the unemployment figures, whether California or national, tend to be, what's a polite word for it? Well, they're fudged, is basically what it comes down to, because they use different sorts of categories to try and massage the numbers to be something that doesn't seem like it's such a big problem here. And one of the ones that is very common is to be on the unemployment figures. You have to have just recently lost your job. You have to be actively looking for a job. You have to be collecting unemployment benefits. If you've run out of benefits, you get moved to a different category, and you're not counted in those unemployment numbers anymore. If you have stopped looking for work, you're not counted in unemployment. And, of course, the big problem the unemployment numbers are not dealing with at all is the millions and millions and millions of Americans who have lost their high-paying jobs and who've been forced to take, you know, menial minimum wage jobs. There are people who a year ago were making $120,000 a year, and this year they're making $40,000. They're considered employed. And it doesn't reveal that our standard of living as a whole nation is in serious, serious decline, while Bernie Madoff and his boys made off with $50 billion. And nobody seems to want to dig too deeply into where it all went. So the unemployment numbers are really only telling part of the story because, there are really a lot of people out of work. And once Christmas is over, once the Christmas shopping season is over, you're going to see a lot of retail outlets close their doors. Some of them they've already announced, like Circuit City. We've got one here at the bottom of the hill right by Pearl Harbor. And you can tell they're closing after Christmas because huge gaps in the floor now. They're selling their in-store inventory. Nothing new is coming in. When it's all gone, they're closing the doors. We had CompUSA went out of business earlier this year. Nobody has moved into that retail space, either one of them. They had two stores here on Oahu, one down on Ala Moana and one right here in Aiea, and both of them are still sitting empty. Nobody has moved in there. Huge, huge retail vacancy problem right now, and it's going to get worse after the first of the year. All right, turning over to other parts of the world, to Afghanistan, and big mistake, the Afghanis have shelled the Christmas turkeys, and they're making this big story like, how could they, those darn Afghanis, they're Grinches, they spoiled the Christmas for the British soldiers. Well, actually, putting the British in Afghanistan is what spoiled Christmas for them. I rather doubt the Afghanis knew what was in the truck. It was just a target, and it's rather pointless to ascribe additional malice to them. They're shooting at the enemy. They're shooting at the people invading their country. And if our nation was being invaded, I'd be out there shooting at their trucks. And if it contained their Christmas turkeys, too bad. Meanwhile, John Hutton, the British Defense Secretary, has compared the Taliban and al-Qaeda to the Nazis. Inevitably, we're going to try and go back and revive the Nazis as an excuse one more time, saying that British forces in Afghanistan are defending the country's values as they did in the Second World War. I'm sorry, Mr. Hutton, your knowledge of history is really rather weak. World War II was not about values. Nazi Germany was trying to invade everybody, including England. And this time, it's the other way around. Great Britain, together with the United States, they're the ones doing the invading. And they've got concentration camps full of prisoners, and they're torturing people. We're the Nazis this time. The Taliban are defending their homes from a foreign invader. Remember 200 years ago, a bunch of my ancestors shot up a bunch of your ancestors? Same thing. You were invading. We're kicking you out. That's basically the deal there. A little bit closer to home, and to tell you, either our cops are just completely done. Because remember yesterday we talked about this cough drop, vitamin C cough drop. And this 9-year-old girl in her school was giving a friend a vitamin C cough drop, and the teacher brings her up on charges of selling drugs in class. And if that weren't bad enough, apparently, 12-year-old girl walking up her own front walk at her home was tackled by police who thought she was a prostitute. And after she got out of the hospital, the police charged her for assaulting one of the officers who had beaten her up during the arrest. I want to talk about an out of control situation with the police between their tasers. And by the way, those are not non-lethal. They've killed something like 400 people in this country with those tasers. And the police or the courts are basically, there's this huge push to declare every one of these taser deaths, they were either hyperexcited or it was just a non-related natural cause death. They just happened to die while we were pumping 30,000 volts into them. But it's not the fault of the police or the taser company. Obviously, the Kay Lee story is ramping up and it's being waved as a banner by the media, which prefers not to talk about certain other things that we're going to get to real quick here. They did confirm that the body found was that of the missing 3-year-old. And so the mother who's in prison can't get onto this thing about when I get out of jail, I'm going to find my little girl. And it's a tragedy, yes, when a parent kills a child, but it does happen on a pretty regular basis. And I think the only reason this is being fanned as a big headline story is we have a mainstream media that doesn't want to talk about certain other things. And they're looking to keep our focus. We used to call it being conditized back in the run-up to the invasion of Afghanistan, when the U.S. government told everybody else we're going to invade Afghanistan in October, and we, the people, were getting all Gary Conned all the time. We're going to update the term. It's Kayleyized. We're being Kayleyized. The media is trying to keep us looking over here when the real news that affects our lives is happening elsewhere. Because no matter how you feel about Kay Lee and the tragedy of her death and murder, it doesn't affect your life directly. Bernie Madoff and the money he stole may affect your life directly if your pension plan was invested with his group, or if the company you work for was invested in their group, or the scholarship you thought you were getting to go to school this next spring came from one of the foundations that just evaporated from the face of the earth. That's affecting your life. Dick Cheney admitting that he authorized torture affects your life because our country, our people, will be judged by history, by how we respond to the fact that the Vice President of the United States has just admitted he authorized the torturing of prisoners. That's a war crime. And we got to do something about that. So when we come back, I didn't really mean to get into this, but we had a call during the first hour talking about the European riots and whether or not they're going to come here to the United States. So I think we're going to spend a little bit of time on that. When we come back from these commercials, call us at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Do you think we're coming up on a period of civil unrest here in the United States? We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And the lines are open right now. And remember, the more you call in, the less you have to listen to me yak. So moving right along, and before we get back to the what they're now starting to call the Greek syndrome, we are just getting word that the Picower Foundation, which is one of the largest funders of brain research at MIT, and diabetes research at Harvard Medical School has had to close their doors. They had their entire endowment invested with Bernard Madoff, and so they basically had to shut their doors now as well. And, you know, like I said, we have not seen the end of this. We know that Madoff had some of his investments and money in the Swiss banks that just recently started allowing information about secret bank accounts for tax evasion to become public. So this is going to continue to unwind, and I think the bottom line is that Bernard is the figurehead, but ultimately he didn't operate in a vacuum. There are a lot of other people involved with this. They're very, very nervous right now, and there's a lot of people don't want this to get investigated all the way down. And I think that's one of the reasons they rush so quickly to say, well, there's a taxpayer bailout. We'll make up the money from the taxpayers, so we don't need to go looking to see where the money went, because I think where the money went is the real scandal here. Now, during the first hour, for those of you, you just joined us during hour two, and that includes some of our ground affiliates, we had a phone call from a listener in response to a story where the Independent is no longer calling the riots in terms of Greece or France or Denmark or Italy. They're simply saying the European riots. It is simply spread all over Europe, and whether or not the riots could come here. And I think this is an issue that we've kind of been avoiding. A lot of people have mentioned it. Citigroup was talking about riots coming to the United States and civil unrest. It's a very unpleasant thought to think about. I got to sit through the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles. Obviously, we're talking here about something potentially with orders of magnitude more severe. And we're going to go to the phones. We've got Kurt in Ohio listening to us on WCER. Kurt, aloha. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too, sir.
The point you brought up about the riots coming here, now I'm in a little bit different of a place than you are, so you might be looking at a different type of people, but mm-hmm. I honestly don't see it. I just don't see people, and I'm not saying that they would be wrong if they were to protest. I'm saying I just don't see enough people with enough gumption to get it together to start doing it.
Well, Ceausescu thought exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I you know, I'm not making a claim that I'm right, but I just see so yeah. much apathy, so much amnesia, so much I see people more likely getting on their hands and knees and begging for crumbs off the table than actually finally getting mad about something.
Well, you could be right. Time alone will solve that mystery. But, you know, my opinion is that the great social upheavals have always occurred, you know, when rulers miscalculate the tolerance of their subjects to put up with this kind of nonsense, whether that was Charles I or Mussolini or Ceausescu or whoever. Sooner or later, the arrogance exceeds common sense, and you hit that flashpoint. Louis XVI, another good example. And one should never confuse silence for consent, because as I was mentioning when we had that first call, right now one out of every 10 homes in the United States is behind in their mortgage or already in foreclosure. One out of every 5 homes is in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service. That's 60 million people right there who are angry and ready to strike out because they don't know what else to do. And
well,
that is a very, very dangerous situation.
You know, my viewpoint, you know, is, you know, I admit this is partially colored by, it's only a superficial observation on my part, you know. So, mm-hmm. you know, I could be mistaken, and, you know, about 10 or 12 years ago, I was a little ahead of the curve, and I moved out of any place that, where trouble starts, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably in a quieter area than most people are. You know,
well, good for you.
That's kind of my observation, and I can't say I'm really happy about it because, you know, I'm a regular listener to Alex Jones, and, you know, and I hear him say, you know, why aren't people mad about this? Because this is terrible, and the only rational thing to do is to get mad about it, and I don't see mm-hmm. people getting mad about it. But
I'm starting to see it. A lot of people are suppressing their anger because it is the government, and they realize that individually against the government, they don't have a chance of doing anything. But it, when all those angry people get together, then the dynamics will change. You also need to remember, we already know that there are tiny amounts of tranquilizers in the water supplies of at least 25 American cities. Nobody's really looking to see how much of what others might be there. But it's entirely possible that, you know, the major cities are being literally drugged through the city water supply. We know there are pharmaceuticals in there.
The sodium fluoride and probably other things. You're absolutely right.
Well, yeah, prescription medications and stuff. They found large amounts of known tranquilizers. Now, they're not clinical doses where people are going to feel they're being tranquilized, but it might be just enough to take the edge off. And,
right.
You know,
that's a
water
point
purification
I had thought
doesn't. Yeah, water purification doesn't take that stuff out. You know, it's at the molecular level. Anyway, Kurt, we got to let you go. We got another caller waiting on the line. So thank you for the call, and we're going to switch to John in Texas. Aloha, John. What's on your mind?
Aloha, it's Michael.
John. Aloha, sir.
Aloha, y'all. Aloha, y'all?
Yes.
Yeah. I used to live in Hawaii, actually.
What part?
I lived on the Big Island, and I went to Hawaii Preparatory Academy.
Okay, well, brah, what's up?
Yeah, well, I was calling in on the issue with regard to, like, rioting coming here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some observations based on the troubles that they had at the political conventions this year. And I think what has happened that over the years, or let's say since the Vietnam War, to give it a starting point, I think that the authorities have made protest into a silly business. If you looked at what happened in Minneapolis and Denver, you had people trying to levitate a building and dressed up, and people, you know, the code pink, all dressed in pink, and this and that. And then you look at what's going on in Greece, and those people are really serious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at the level of street protest at the violence and frustration being vented out, whether it was in France last year, or year before, or in Greece now, these people know how to get in the street and get something done.
Yeah, they absolutely do, and you know, they have courage that right now Americans only dream of. John, can you stick with us through the break?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a break here, listen to some commercials. We're going to come back and talk about the European riots. Will it happen here? What is the future for America going into 2009? We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for Freak Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back. We're talking with John in Texas, and the subject is the riots across Europe. Can they come here? Will they come here? A lot of mixed opinions. We put a poll up on whatreallyhappened.com, and right now about three-quarters of the respondents are saying that, yes, such unrest is going to happen here in the United States. And, John, going back to what you were talking about in the last segment, I'd like to clarify something here. What is happening in Europe are riots. What has been happening here in the United States to date are protests. Now, regarding some of the really loopy protests like levitating the building, those are staged public relations events that are designed to give the media a device to ridicule protesters in order to dismiss them and their concerns ahead of the political conventions. As far as Code Pink is concerned, that's a very clever branding device that they've come up with, and it's drawn a lot of support to them and a lot of donations and a lot of grants so that they can continue their work. So I think actually they were very clever to do that. We've had some of their people on our show before, and so I wouldn't dismiss them so lightly. But, yes, some of the really crazy people, and anytime you've got a protest that's against the war, you're going to see people in there with signs about release the UFO files, and they're really government plants, and they're there so that the TV news crews can focus on them in order to sort of tarnish the whole group of protesters with what appears to be a nut job. It's called kookification, or poisoning the well, if you want to use the correct term of craft. Now, the reason we've got riots in Europe, a riot is what happens when protesters realize nobody's listening to them anymore. And we've reached that point already. There were a lot of people who thought when Barack Obama was elected, we were going to get changed, that we were going to pull off this headlong rush to more war and everything. Everybody is realizing now what a huge, huge misplacement of faith and trust that was. Barack Obama is loading up his administration with a bunch of Clinton cronies. He is not going to prosecute the preceding administration for war crimes. He may even go so far as to actively block any investigations into the war crimes and tortures of the preceding administration. And so everybody's feeling, okay, this isn't change. There was no difference between Obama and McCain. We're getting the same crap thrown at us no matter who we vote for. So we've reached the same point as the people in Greece and France and Denmark and Iceland and Thailand. We know the government is completely unresponsive to us. It's just looting us for their own personal benefit. If protesting won't work, if voting won't change anything, what is left? And at that point, that's when the rocks and the bricks and the guns get picked up.
Right, and I agree. And please understand, I wasn't slamming these organizations. I guess, and I didn't articulate it well, the point I wanted to make was that you have young people today who watch this on television, okay, and they kind of see the imagery, and this is what's being fed to them as this is a protest, this is what it's about, da-da-da-da-da. You see what I'm saying? It's kind of a conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So the group in this country that I think everyone has overlooked is, if I can use the old Revolutionary War term, is the dangerous old men. I don't think it's going to be the young people coming up. It's going to be guys like myself, 50 years old, who've worked hard all their lives and built something and have it get laid off and get their pensions fund and get so frustrated because we know the government's not listening to us. We're tired of receiving the form letters back from our representatives, okay, and the auto dialers asking for our support when they won't even listen to us. We're sick of it. We're sick of it. And I think it's going to be on the front of that line is going to be guys like me, you know, who are going to be saying enough's enough. And I think what you'll see is an evolution here in the United States of starting out with protests. Peaceful protest. That's the way we all want to go. We want to try to work within the system, try to correct things and do that. If that fails, it has failed. But I don't think the majority of the people here haven't come to that realization yet. I think there's a group of us. We know it's failed. I mean, you and I talking, we know it's failed. We know the frustrations. We see the problems. Okay? But there's a large segment of our society that hasn't quite gotten there yet. It hasn't quite hit them yet. And when it hits that group and they realize and they wake up, if I can use that term, we'll see the street protest. And then that'll be short-lived, I think, unfortunately. And then we're going to go into stepping up the violence. And I think that's why also looking at Denver and Minneapolis situation, you saw such a powerful turnout by law enforcement who were way over the top in their responses. And I think a lot of that was to scare the bejesus on the people who were sitting on the fence.
I think you're absolutely right. The degree of preparation at both the political conventions, I think, basically underscores the fact that the government realizes it's pushed the population to the edge of open rebellion. Now, I want to wrap this up because we've got another caller waiting on the line I want to get to.
Sure, absolutely.
But if you look at the protests that we've had, going back to 2003 when the war first started, we had millions of people marching in the streets. That was the protest. And we did have the majority of the American people aware than what was going on. The protests have kind of faded out because the population understands the government isn't listening anymore. That with rampant vote fraud, they're not paying attention to the petitions, they're not paying attention to the protests. So we've had this long, calm period where people are angry, but they're not protesting because they know it doesn't work. We're in the same situation Greece was about a month ago. We're just waiting for everybody's going to say, oh, yeah, this is it. And you're absolutely right about the angry old men. Yes, I'm one of them, too. Because, you see, young people, no matter how bad things get, they know in their head they're going to live long enough they can come back from it. Yes, we're going into a new depression. We survive to the other side. I'll be able to still make a life on the other side. But you and I and people in our age bracket, we've worked our entire lives. We've built up a life for ourselves, and we're watching it literally melt in our hands. Despite all that we do, and we know we don't have enough years left to ourselves to rebuild our lives. We're seeing our lives come to an end right in front of us, right now, dissolving away. Of course we're going to be angry. We're going to be furious. We know we're not going to get another chance. So, yeah, that's why we're going to be out there on the front lines. And we have skills. Okay, we're going to let you go here, John, and thank you very much for the call. We're going to switch to Dave in California. So, Dave, aloha. Welcome to the show.
Angry old men unite.
I'm going to have to make a T-shirt about that.
Yeah, well, I'm one of them, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that a lot of it has to do with the tranquilizing of the population. I mean, we've got, was it somewhere around 75% of the major population is now drinking fluoridated water. Who knows exactly how much they're putting in there, you know, and not to mention the fact that we've got fluoridated toothpaste, we've got fluoridated every damn thing, so there's that, and we know that's a tranquilizer. Plus, we've got on Prozac and all the other SSRIs, you know, that's a huge chunk of the population, you know,
and
so those
Valium
people,
and...
Yeah, and so there is that aspect of it, and it's their job to either keep us from fighting at all, just like you said, let us just bend over and, you know, kiss their toes, or to keep us fighting amongst each other. And that's what
Go fight the people living over the oil. They want us to go fight and kill the people living over the oil.
Yeah, and each other as well. I mean, get the different factions fighting against each other, the people that don't like Obama because he's black, or the people that, you know, because there's a million different ways they can splinter the population into warring factions, and that is what the CIA does anytime they take over another country.
Oh, yeah, that and the FBI, they did it all the way back in COINTELPRO and during Vietnam days and everything. Dave, stick with us. We've got to take a break here for some commercials. We'll be back and finish up the last segment of today's show with Dave from California after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got Dave on the phone from California. And before we get back to him, though, I want to read a quick email from a listener regarding the European riots. And says, the Europeans have been through it twice. They recognize it when they see it. That's absolutely it. Big mistake number one and big mistake number two were fought on their turf. We never saw any of the battles of World War I and World War II on the ground here in the United States. Yes, there was some coastal shipping sunk off of New Jersey, That was as close as it got to us. We didn't see the bombs fall on our homes, in our backyards. We didn't see our family shot dead before our eyes in the streets. They did. They see the push towards a new global war. They don't want it. They understand why. All right, so, Dave, basically, obviously I'm in disagreement a little bit with some of our preceding callers. I think we've already gone through the stage of attempting to protest and convince the government that we, the people, want something different. The government has routinely shown that they don't care what we think. I mean, the bailout is an obvious example. 90% of the calls going to Congress were opposing the $700 billion bailout. They passed it anyway, illegally, I might add. Last week, we had a bank in Oregon was bombed. That may be the opening shot to seeing what's happening in Europe start to happen here in the United States.
Yeah, I hadn't heard anything about the bombing in Oregon, but I agree with you. I think that, and I agree with your emailer, that we don't recognize it as well as we could, although 9/11 sticks in people's minds now, and then, of course, all the false flag terror that's happened since then, and then all the research that's been done into all the other false flag terror, like MI5 running all the bombings in Ireland and all that stuff. People are catching on, it's the bad guys' job to keep us fighting amongst ourselves and keep us fighting in some other war for some other reason, and it's our job to keep focusing on the people that actually did this to us, and the higher mm-hmm. the better, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that's probably why they don't like to talk about Ceausescu and Mussolini being dragged through the streets with a horse and then disemboweled and hung upside down with his wife. You know, they don't. I'm sure that that's not a big part of history because they don't really like to think about that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, look at the way, you know, history is written by the governments or the government-appointed writers. I mean, you look at the history of the French Revolution and they call it a reign of terror. It was a reign of terror because it was happening to the nobility. I mean, the total number of people actually killed by the guillotine is actually rather small. In fact, you know, less than a year on the freeways of Los Angeles, in fact, I think. But the bottom line is it was a reign of terror because it was happening to the rich and powerful.
Yeah.
And that was the context in which I was written. But the bottom line is that, you know, governments do make that mistake of pushing their people one step too far, and that's when a revolution happens. And I think we're already there. And the fact is that the U.S. government has put itself in such a position, it can't turn around and go back. It can't admit it lied, even though the people know that it did. I think the U.S. government is simply trapped by the accumulation of former corruptions and deceptions, and it can't turn away. And that's why, ultimately, I think it's going to go the way of the USSR. It's just going to collapse from its own rot, I hope, with relatively little bloodshed. But as I've said before to a lot of people who've called in on this subject, if there is a prolonged rebellion, riot, revolution, whatever you want to call it here in this country, they do not need to march into Washington, D.C. They do not need to even conquer much territory. All they need to do is survive long enough to send a message to the rest of the world that we, the American people, are not going to be forced to pay the costs of the promises the U.S. government makes anymore. And at that point, the foreign investment parked in our country will get withdrawn, and the whole system will come crashing down. This is how Castro defeated Batista. Castro and his army never marched on Havana until they had their victory parade driving in after Batista had already bugged out. So, you know, this idea of a prolonged new civil war, I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's just going to be a huge series of unrest until the point where foreign investors will get the message that we may have fallen for the SNL bailout in the 1980s. We're not going to fall for it again. We're not going to pledge the lives and work of our children as indentured slaves to cover bad investments made in American government and American business. And once that message goes out and we show that we can make it stick, well, they're going to look for safer places to park their money, and that's when everything's going to unravel.
What do you think is going to happen to the people at the top? If, you know, let's use your scenario and say that it comes to pass. What will happen to them? I mean, as long as they're around, they're going to keep on trying to kill us off.
Well, they have to have their hands on the reins of government to keep on doing it, and the whole point of collapsing the government is those mechanisms would dissolve. We the people would be in the position of creating a whole new government that excluded those former players. As far as what would happen to them personally, I mean, there's kind of two schools of thought on that. One is put them on a boat, let them go someplace else, and I don't care what happens to them because I've got more important things to think about. Then there's the school of thought saying that we need to set an example of a deterrent for future generations. That's the French Revolution model, where they sent all the royalty and ruling people to the guillotine, and after several false starts, the government they finally wound up with in France really was very respectful and timid around the French people for at least the next 100 years. And you have to have the government afraid of the people if you're going to have liberty and freedom. And so very often you make an example of the old leaders in order to create that deterrent for the new leaders. Then you also have the Russian Revolution model, which is you don't dare leave the figureheads alive for a counter-revolution to take place. So a couple of different schools of thought on that.
Okay, Mike. Nice talking to you.
All right, thanks a lot, Dave. Thanks for the call and calling again. We're coming down to the end of the show here, and I know it's kind of a depressing thing to think about that the United States, as we have known it, may be coming to an end, but if you're as old as I am, and that's getting there, you begin to realize that the United States, as we knew it in our youth, is already gone. You know, between rigged elections, torture, the total corruption. Oh, my goodness, we've got one more caller on the line. I think we've got time to fit him in. We're going to go to Chris in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Chris? Do we not have Chris? Going once, going twice. Okay. So where was I? It's not pleasant to think about, but we've already lost the country that we thought we lived in. We saw it begin to die when John Kennedy was killed, and it just accelerated when we got this Clinton-Bush duopoly, which has cursed our nation for the last quarter of a century and will continue to do so under the Obama administration. And we know it's all wrapped up in drug dealing. We have drug lords running our government. It's worse than prohibition when organized crime took over the government and corrupted it. And it ended only when prohibition was repealed. And even still, it had reshaped the political landscape. The Kennedys had grown rich on rum-running money and to this very day are still icons of American political life. And you know, but the bottom line is that countries never last forever. None ever has. And 200 years is a very good run. And even Thomas Jefferson himself, if you read his notes about the nation he'd created, he did not expect the United States to last very long. He expected it to eventually be swept away by a new revolution, which would come up with even newer ideas to try and basically complete the process of evolving. Better government, better society, better civilization. And I really think we're at that point right now where we're going to see the United States kind of fade away. And beyond that, all of us need to start thinking about what kind of a country we want to see take its place. Now, for my part, I'm in favor of going right back to the Constitution and the original Bill of Rights and scrapping the rest of it. New constitutional convention to say, okay, what's worth keeping and what isn't. I definitely want a balanced budget amendment. I don't want the government to be able to go out and spend more money than it has. And I definitely do not want a Federal Reserve type national bank. We didn't have one when this country was started. There were two of them they tried to put through. Both of them had their charters yanked by courageous presidents. And then we got the Federal Reserve. It was signed into law by Woodrow Wilson, and he even wrote in his diary that he recognized at the time that he had ultimately destroyed his own country. So now's the time to start thinking about what will replace the United States, because it doesn't look like this one's going to last very much longer. That's it for today's show. We'll be back Monday at Monday evening with your phone calls, more news. Until then, stay safe, be well, drive safely, a lot of road rage out there, and aloha, America.